Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a fabulous guest that we are talking with from, I believe it's Scotland, but I could be wrong. Am I correct, Dr. Robert Curran?
It's Robert Curran, but you're quite right, Donna.
You're in Scotland, and you've got...
I am in Northern Ireland, just across from Scotland. But half an hour down the road, I can see I am looking directly into Scotland.
Well, you're a man that has a most unique vocation, and I've been telling my audience about your being my guest today, and that we were going to be talking via the wonders of technology overseas, and here you are stuck in a blizzard. That is just incredible, and you're snowed in, so we really have got
to... We're more or less snowed in, Donna. Although I was down in the town today, but was unable to stay because all the schools were getting out, businesses were closing. This is the biggest snowstorm today we have had in 25 years. So it's snowstorm. Technology doesn't work in the snow.
Yes, that is true. Now, I want my audience to know, and of course, you've been a guest on my show before. You have had a very interesting life. You've been a grave digger. You've been a musician. You're a writer, a journalist. You have worked for the government, and history has been a passion of yours. And you're very well known throughout Ireland and, of course, around the world. You have written about everything from vampires to werewolves and lost lands, forgotten realms. And this book, Man-Made Monsters, it's a field guide to golems, patchwork soldiers, homunculi, and other created creatures. And someone might say, Donna, why in the world during the holiday season are you going to have something like this on? It's because you go into so much history. Your material is so much fun to go through.
Well, it started out, Donna, because whenever I was growing up, I was a big fan of the Frankenstein movies. You may have seen them, the old movies with Boris Karloff things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody said to me, you know, that could be real. You know, maybe people could, and there was talk, I'm speaking about back in the 50s, Donna. If you could see the gray in my beard, you'd know how old I was. But back in the late 40s, early 50s, people were saying, you know, it could be real, and that could be the future. So I began to research about a bit, and that stayed with me. So when New Page asked me to do a new book for them, I wanted to indulge my passion about the Frankenstein book, which I'd read and which I enjoyed, Frankenstein films, which were part of my own youth, and some of the ideas which people had talked to me about and we had looked at, and we wanted to look at man-made monsters simply because there is a fundamental question, Donna. It doesn't matter whether that can be whether we can create life or not. The question is, what would it be like if we could create life? If we could be on a par with a supreme being? And the second part of that question is, if we could, what would it be like? Would it be as good as, let's say, a supreme creator could produce? And the consensus seems to be that it wouldn't. And we are both curious and repelled by that idea. I mean, we can talk about this later there, but the idea of the man-made monster is a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, today we talk about cloning, and we say GM crops are maybe good, they may feed the world's starving. GM animals, such as Dolly the sheep, may be good because they can produce meat, they can produce milk, in which we can introduce disease abating elements and therefore make the milk healthy. And on the other side of that, Donna, we ask ourselves, but what happens if we go too far, and what might we create? And the suggestion is that we could create a monster. So the idea both fascinates us and terrifies us at the same time, and that was what I wanted to write about, and that was what I wanted to put across in the book.
There, whenever you go through history, every culture has its stories of monsters. And I know in the Russian culture, there are phenomenal stories of horrific monsters, and often they were brought about because people had such tough lives that their ignorance allowed their imaginations on many levels to create whatever could be designed as a demon or whatever, and it was a way of controlling people. It was a way of dominating a level of thinking and fear. The Christians did it in Europe when we look at the Dark Ages. That was one of the big things. Monsters were created then, demons and devils. Every culture seems to be able to dredge up something. But when we come to, let's say, I can't say it's really modern times, but when you think of Mary Shelley, and she's one of the first people you mention in the book, going right along with your talking about Frankenstein, she was quite a gal. Now, how did Frankenstein come about? I understood it was through a dream that she had.
Mary Shelley lived at a very interesting time. Because the time she was living at the end of the 1700s, beginning of the 1800s, there was a transition going on in people's thinking. And that was from the sort of magical tradition of earlier times into the scientific. And if you look at the story of Frankenstein, that bridges both traditions. Because Victor Frankenstein, remember that Frankenstein is that we think is not the monster. The monster is nameless, and I think that is important because the real monster may be Victor Frankenstein, the creator himself, and he looks back towards old traditions. If you look at his at her descriptions of his bookshelf, he has some of the old magic texts, Paracelsus, Albertus Magnus, things like that. But he is a scientist. And there were all sorts of transitions going on in which people asked, would it be possible to bring somebody back from the dead? Now, that was important at the time because there were a number of very ferocious wars going on in Europe, of which Mary Shelley would have been aware. And she might have been aware of the thinking of the time. One of the great theaters of warfare was the sea, particularly between England and France. And drowned sailors were being dredged up from various battles at sea. And the Navy was thinking, what if these men could be brought back to life and hurled back into battle again? And she was aware of experiments, particularly a massive experiment, which was done in front of many of the great naval heads and other scientific heads in London by an Italian called Giovanni Aldini, who attempted to resurrect a hanged criminal, George Foster. using what was called galvanic electricity, which was a sort of electricity which was said to power the body, and which might be, if you like, jump started after the body had been dead for a little time. But there was a great element of, and there was an element of magic in that, because whenever Aldini was conducting various experiments in order to raise money for this massive experiment, he performed all sorts of what we would call today as parlor tricks. And, for instance, in his native Italy, he took a severed head and pumped electricity through it and made the eyes move. Now, today, Donna, we take electricity as for granted. We switch on and off lights. We switch on ovens, whatever. But in the 17 and early 1800s, electricity was a magical thing. It was a world lit by gas and candles. Mm-hmm. And as I say, even gas was relatively new. So electricity was magical. So you had a transition using the magic and the scientific. Now, Mary Shelley would have been aware of Aldini's experiments. She would also have been aware of other experiments, because her father, William Godwin, was very interested in those sort of experiments. He was a great philosopher. And so the notion of Frankenstein is a combination of all these things. The scientific experiments to try and bring people back to life, the philosophical debate of about that, the promptings of the Navy in order, the English Navy, in order to try and get to resurrect drowned sailors, and things like that. So Mary Shelley would have been well aware of that, and perhaps this influenced her thinking when she travelled through Germany and heard about another great man, Conrad Dippel, who actually lived at Castle Frankenstein, because near Darmstadt in Germany, because there is a place called Castle Frankenstein. And Dippel was supposed to be an alchemist, although he was a great religious thinker at the time, and got on the wrong side of the Lutheran Church. But he was supposed to be an alchemist, and he was supposed to have conducted secret experiments. So all this would have come into Mary Shelley's mind. It may have appeared in a dream, as you suggest. It may have certainly influenced her thinking when she came to write a book.
Well, that is true, because so much of what we experience, read, observe, goes into the subconscious, and there might be that wonderful moment where we get a composite, which is what I think happened with her, and she put it together, and it has been, the story has been told ever since, and it's been elaborated. Now, you also have a chapter on what you call the figures in the shadows, and it's about a creature called the Golem, and this was something that actually, supposedly, was developed by a rabbi, but the Golem, what you have in here, is very similar to what Tibetans describe as a spirit that can be manufactured. It's an energy form, a thought form is the term I should use. And they warn of this because it will take on its own persona and it will not listen to, quote-unquote, the master that creates it. And, folks, if this sounds a little bit weird, spooky, it is something, it is recorded historically. Now, the Golem, give us more information about the rabbi that supposedly started this particular tradition of information.
Well, Donna, many rabbis, it was thought, could create the Golem. Now, the Golem was the descendant or a sort of prototype. Whenever God made man, Adam, or Jehovah made Adam because it came from Jewish lore. He did a couple of prototypes, one of whom was Adam Kadmon, who was an imperfect creation, a huge humanoid figure made of clay, because man was made from the dust of the earth. So the golem was a sort of prototype of man, which could be created by a rabbi who was pure in heart and in thought, word, and deed. So, and there was a great ritual associated with it. It was supposed to be taken from a book called the Sefer Yetzirah, or the Book of Formation, which was allegedly the words of creation spoken by Jehovah or God and given to the patriarch Abraham. And this was supposed to be written down. Now, the golem you ask specifically about is the Golem of Prague, which comes about the end of the 1500s, beginning of the 1600s in Eastern Europe. And the rabbi involved was Rabbi Judah Lowe, the Maharal of Prague, or chief rabbi of Prague. And he was supposed to be a very holy man and a great teacher. And he created the golem out of mud in order to defend, if you like, or perhaps to as a deterrent to Christian persecution of the Jews in Prague by the King Rudolf II of Bohemia. But you're quite right, Donna. Once the rabbi created the golem for a while, and he did it with a special word, which was written on the golem's forehead or placed on a tablet under the golem's tongue in its mouth. And the special word was emeth, and that meant truth in ancient Hebrew. Now, to destroy the golem, all you had to do was remove the first aleph or letter, and it gave meth, which meant unformed, and the golem collapsed. But if you left the golem too long, you're quite right, it could develop, just as Adam Kadmon had, when God created him, its own thoughts and its own instincts. And it turned against the Christians of Prague and murdered several of them. And the rabbi had to come and destroy it on, or allegedly destroy it, on the steps of the old new synagogue in Prague. Now, there are some versions which say that the rabbi could not destroy it because the golem had become so advanced. And it was placed in the Geniza, which is a place for storing religious texts. And it is still there in the synagogue. Each year, the chief rabbi of Prague receives roughly 1,000 requests to go up and see if people can see it, because the Geniza is not open to anybody except the chief rabbi. The chief rabbi always refuses that request. But what I think the golem also symbolizes, particularly as far as the Christians went, at the end of the 15th and the beginning of the 1600s, was that there was a great fear of another religion in their city. The Christians feared the Jews, and the golem became almost a symbol of the Jewish terror. Later on, it became a symbol of anti-Semitism, because this gave, let's say, some of the Nazis around Prague an excuse to massacre some of the Jews. Mm-hmm. The golem, like many monsters, becomes a symbol and grows in the mind. So in many ways, we create our own monsters, and that is reflected in the title, Man-Made Monsters, because the monsters are not monsters in themselves, like Frankenstein, but mm-hmm. they are the monsters that we create.
Of the people, our imagination, people's minds. Now, you cover so many different cultures, and one of the things you covered was about the Arab people, Islamic yep. alchemists. And alchemists were all around the world, and it's called the concept of taqwin. And
yes, that was that came out of Arabic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the alchemists, we have to say, were the forerunners of ancient science.
Absolutely.
And taqwin was the creation of life. The alchemists sought three things. They sought the philosopher's stone, and you may have heard that from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That was the turning of an element which could turn base metals into gold. They sought the emerald tablet, a few grains of which, if taken in a drink, could extend a mortal life and perhaps make somebody immortal. And they also sought a special seed, and this is where the taqwin came in, that would grow a man. Because they thought, some of the ancient alchemists argued that it was possible to plant a seed and grow a man like a plant. This was one of the things which they sought after. Now, many of the great nobles of the time who became patrons to some of the alchemists and financed some of their work used that for political purposes, because if you could grow a man, like a plant, you could probably also grow an army. And it didn't matter whether the alchemist had found this miraculous seed or not. If he could circulate a rumor that he was on the verge of doing it, or that she was, because some of the alchemists were women,
mm-hmm.
Were on the verge of doing that, then you would terrify your opponents or your enemies, you could achieve greater power in the area. So this certainly came from the Arabic tradition, because many of our mathematics and many of our ancient many of our sciences actually come from the Arabic tradition. Alchemy actually became almost the forerunner of chemistry, because what you have is people working with various elements in alembics and sealed jars, and it was thought that they had created life within some of these sealed jars, and they could grow various lives, various and perfect lives, from seeds, a bit like a plant.
Mm-hmm. Well, you not only go into stories like this and information, all of which you have verified in your research, but you go into various elements which are very popular, the mandrake, which was featured in Harry Potter's story. I mean, so many
yep.
of the Harry Potter sequences had so much of this that has been associated with the unknown through the centuries. And that's what makes Harry Potter such a fascinating sequence of stories and eventually became movies. But your Chinese legends, and there was one that I just was intrigued with. It's Meidu Qi Yu, which was a fantastic dragon that lived in inhospitable mountains, but nobody knows where it was. And it was definitely an automated device. Now, the Chinese, centuries ago, had worked with mechanical devices. In fact, computers, they are learning, was around. They were
mm-hmm.
around a long time ago, not as we have them today, but they still existed. Tell us about this Chinese legend.
Absolutely, Donna. Now, we tend to look back from our sort of the 21st century and say, weren't those people way back then very primitive and very backward? And that is not the case. They were probably more advanced than we were. For instance, and you're quite right, we do know that they had computers because we have one of their computers, which was brought up in the 1900s from the wreck of a Roman ship off the coast of the Greek island of Antikythera in the Greek archipelago. And it was brought up in 1900 by a number of divers who were down there. And it is an early computer which was being transported back to Rome. It gave movements of the stars, movements of the planets, and was used for calculating troop movements. It was a defensive, and we think it was one of two computers which was developed by the great Greek mathematician Archimedes. So, but to get back to the Chi-Yu, yes, we believe that it may well have been some form of automated quarrying device which was used by the ancient Chinese. Now, we don't have a date for it, and it only appears in legend, but the descriptions of it with long antennae, which are a bit like radio antennae from the description, we think it was used to crush up rocks because they talk about it eating rocks and then excreting rocks, which were sort of crunched up. So it may well have been some sort of quarrying device, and it may have been powered by some sort of internal motor, which died at some point, because it says that the Chi-Yu died, and no man knew why, and its body was taken in its place in the inhospitable mountains and placed in a cave, and it was sealed up. Rocks were piled up around it, and the cave entrance was hidden, so it's probably still lying there. But we do know that there were ancient mechanical devices a bit like that, and there were mechanical men in the 1700s. I'm thinking of the French man Jacques de Vaucanson, who created automatons so perfect that it was thought it was very difficult to tell them from normal people, and it alarmed the church because de Vaucanson had been trained as a priest but had later went into creating these automatons. I don't use the word robot because robot is a very modern word. It was used by the Czech playwright, first used by the Czech playwright Karel Kapak in 1921 in one of his plays. Mm-hmm. And it referred to a machine which could serve man. But the question always is, and we come back to the double-edged sword, if these machines can serve people and make life easier for us, what happens if they get a wee bit above themselves and turn on them? It is like a bit like the golem, which we talked about earlier.
You talk about a thinking machine. Babbage had created it, Charles Babbage. He was a British inventor. And that's what I love about your material. It's cross-cultural. You don't exclude any group. You say this was done here, whether it was in the Middle East, whether it was done in England, whether it was done in Africa. Your research really takes you to all kinds of places. And I know, Robert, we're just about out of time. What is your website so people can find out more about what you've done? Because it has so much historical reference. It's fascinating reading.
At the moment, Donna, we're putting up a new website. But if people want to find out about the book, to ask me questions, they can get in contact with me using the email address, drbobcurran@yahoo.co.uk, and I'll answer their questions. The new website should be up within the new year.
All right. Repeat your email address one more time.
I will. drbobcurran@yahoo.co.uk.
Bob Curran, thank you so much for being my guest. Happy holidays to you. I hope the blizzard finishes quickly, because that's not fun. You've been involved in that for quite a while. My best to you, your loved ones, your family, and I'm looking forward to your next publication, Bob. Have a wonderful season.
Can I wish you and your listeners a very happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year?
Thank you, Bob. Bye-bye. Till we talk again. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I want to share with you, I've got a wonderful, wonderful chocolate recipe. If you're thinking of making some homemade goodies to give to a friend as a gift, I've got something here, chocolate cups with mascarpone filling. Ooh, yum, 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 yum. And then I've got a wonderful Christmas story I'm going to be sharing with you, and also some special gifts. If you are wanting to do what you'd call green gifts, gifts that make a difference, that your money is going to be going through something or towards something very special, well, I'll be talking about that in just a minute. Meanwhile, I want to open the phone lines, also let you know you can call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I've gotten an email from someone that I don't know what state they were contacting me from, but I found it this morning, and a person was asking me, gee, can you answer questions via email? And I want to say, no, I don't do that. So if you wanted to chat with me, you could call in, Or if you wanted to do a private appointment, that's something that you can do too. And my office number is 800-872-8852. And I do provide gift certificates, by the way. Someone has asked me about that as well. So anyway, that's the information about that. But here's the toll-free number if you want to call in and talk with me directly, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some items because a lot of people are doing shopping at the last minute. Christmas is a week away. Can you believe that? Well, a lot of people have done surveys with holiday shopping because holiday shopping habits obviously have changed a lot. There was a Harris Interactive survey that found that 84% of us would rather receive a Christmas gift that benefits someone else. This just makes it different than just what you'd say is your traditional present. So you can find out about some of these potential gifts. And let me just give you some of these websites because I think it's just great. If you would like to have your money that is donated to Feeding Hungry Children, there is a namusfruitgifts.com. That's N-A-U-M-E-S fruitgifts.com. And what they do, if you buy a fruit basket from them, this is fresh fruit, there's a second one that's automatically donated to a food bank in the United States. And you can pick from several different items, and you can go online, or you can call this number, 877-740-PAIR, 877-740-PAIR. Also, you can choose a basket from giftback.com. They have all kinds of things, chocolates, you name it. And 10% of the price will go straight to your pick of more than 100 charities. And you can go online with them and call 888-576-GIFT, 888-576-GIFT, animals. If you want to help a homeless animal, well, you can buy a gift tote from Stonewall Kitchen, and 5% of the purchase price will be given to the SPCA to rescue animals. And the gift basket, which is selling for $69.95, is filled with all kinds of wonderful sauces and jams and all kinds of good things. So you can go to stonewallkitchen.com or call 800-826-1752. Now, children, if you wanted to donate a plush doll, there's a line called Stinky Kids, and there's 10 plush Madame Alexander dolls, and it says, always be the leader of good. That's what the dolls represent. 10% of the price of the dolls will go to Book Bears and Bonnets. This is a charity that provides gift boxes to hospital patients that are battling life-threatening illnesses. And every doll comes with their own card listing his or her likes and dislikes, and you can buy it for $16.50 at stinkykids.com. Also, they are at Nordstrom's. And there's handcrafted dolls and toys at handcraftingjustice.com. handcraftingjustice.org, and 100% of the money for the item goes to the artisans themselves to help create sustainable living conditions in their developing nations. Now, you'll also find items at craft fairs. You can go to their website and click on News and Events to find one near you, or you can call them directly at 718-204-0909. And also, Cure for Cancer, well, there is a wonderful item. It's an interactive toy called Laffy Laugh-A-Lot. It's an interactive toy that features 20 different sounds of laughter. You can record your own voice on it. You can find it at LaffyLaugh-A-Lot.com, LaffyLaugh-A-Lot.com, and $3 is donated to the National Children's Cancer Society. There are so many wonderful, wonderful organizations that are out there trying to do their best, and there's so many wonderful businesses that if you want to check them out, they often have their favorite charities, and it doesn't hurt. You can go online, you can find out about a lot of this stuff. I just gave you a few because it does make a difference, I think, with how we feel and how we respond to things when we can find what really touches our hearts and minds in a very special way. And, of course, when it comes to gift giving, sometimes we like to find things that maybe that person might not ever buy for themselves. So uniqueness and involvement in the process of bettering other people's lives at the same time in some way or another really does mean a lot to us. Well, I'd be delighted to light up your life if you want to give me a call at 888-815-9756. Get that pad of paper handy and along with a good pen, and I'm going to be sharing a chocolate recipe with you shortly. But before I do that, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up next week. On Monday, we're going to be talking about personality poker. This is a fascinating game by Stephen Shapiro. I met him in New York, and he has this unique application, and I think you'll have fun with it. And then also on Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Al Weatherhead. The topic is power of adversity. Excuse me, the power of adversity. And Al has a lot of concepts relative to this that enable us to overcome adversity. And there are many of us that are going through that, so this is a good support for us in a special way. And then we have the skinny carbs diet. Woohoo! Don't you want to learn about that? What do we take in more during the holidays than any other time? Carbs, carbs, carbs. Yes, yes, yes. It's time for all that fancy cooking. Well, David Fetter has come up with a concept regarding the carbs that maybe you would like to find out more about. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about romantic Christmas stories of the Old West. Maury Neighbors has just put all of this together, and I'll tell you, it was really fun reading these Old West stories. So we'll be talking with him on Thursday, and of course, Friday is Christmas Eve Day, and we're going to be playing The Best of Donna. There is a traditional Christmas show that we put on, and you'll be able to listen to it while you're baking your cookies or doing whatever you're doing on the Christmas holiday. I welcome you to listen in because I think you will really enjoy it. And I'm going to be enjoying preparation because we're going to have a house full at the SIBO residence, so it's going to take time for me to get everything together, but I'll still be with you through these wonderful, wonderful Christmas stories that I'll be sharing. So that's the lineup for next week, and if you want to check further and want to find out what's coming after that, well, then just go right in at bbsradio.com, station number one, to the Donna SIBO Show, and check show information. And there you'll find all kinds of good details that will let you know what you might want to listen to and what's going to be going on with the program. Okay, do you have that pad of paper handy and that pen? Well, keep it there because we are going to take a break for just a moment. And then when I come back, those chocolate cups with mascarpone filling, they are so pretty and they're so easy to make. So don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna SIBO to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Okay, I promised you, here we go, with chocolate cups with mascarpone filling. These are so easy to make, and they are so pretty. Now, you can buy your little candy cups. They look just like your cupcake cups, but they're very small. And I think that when you buy them, you can get the silver foiled ones if you wanted to leave the candy inside the cups. But if you're planning on taking them out of the paper cups, then I would just say get the simple, you know, the paper ones, whatever you like. But this is just so easy to do. And, oh, are they pretty. They are just something that nobody would ever expect. And I'll tell you, they'll be lucky if they make it to the person you want to give a gift to. I don't know about you, but whenever things like this are made, they seem to have a way of disappearing. Maybe because they're bite-sized and, oh, they go good with coffee. Okay, here you go. You're going to need, let me give you the ingredients first, 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, and the filling, you're going to need 3.5 ounces of milk or dark chocolate. Now, I'm a dark chocolate person, but whatever your taste buds are, you're going to need 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and use the real stuff. Don't use the imitation vanilla. Then you want 1 cup of mascarpone cheese. 1 cup of the mascarpone cheese, and then you're going to want a little bit of unsweetened cocoa, just so you can dust the chocolates. Okay, I told you it was simple, not a big deal. You want to take a cookie sheet, and you want to put baking parchment down on it. And then what you want to do is melt your 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, and you want to spoon it into 20 paper candy cases. Now, what I would say is, if you take a, and you can get this at the dollar store, get a, like a paintbrush, and you want to spread it up the sides. When you put it in the, excuse me, when you put the chocolate on, you know, inside the cups, you want to move quickly. And if you have a small brush that's wide, flat and wide, you can put it right, very, very quickly, you can just spread that chocolate right up inside the cups. And then you want to put them upside down on the prepared cookie sheet, and you want them to set. So the chocolate's going to adhere to the paper. Now, once they're set, you just very carefully peel away the paper cases. Or, as I said, if you use the aluminum, or the shiny ones, they're not aluminum, really, but they're shiny, like for the holidays. They have the gold and the silver, and sometimes they have them in red. So whatever you get, just leave them right in there if you want. And then all you do is, to make the filling, you melt your dark or your milk chocolate. Remember, you're going to have 3.5 ounces of that, and you want to place the mascarpone cheese in a bowl. You want to beat in your vanilla extract, and then the melted chocolate, you want to beat that in, too, until it's just totally blended. Then you want to chill it in the refrigerator. And every once in a while, you just beat it a little bit so that it gets really nice and firm. And the colder it gets, the firmer it's going to be. And then you want to take and put the mascarpone filling in a pastry bag fitted with a star tip, and you want to pipe it into the cups. Now, if you do not have a pastry bag and or a star tip, don't worry about it. All you have to do is take a plastic sandwich bag, put your mascarpone mixture into it, clip off a tiny bit on the edge of one corner, and then pipe it out through that. And all you have to do is just move it in a circle and make little peaks. It'll just be as pretty as anything could ever be. So it depends on what you've got handy. And then you just dust it lightly with the cocoa. Now, by leaving it in the cups, if you're transporting it or giving a gift, that's fine. You will find that it travels beautifully, and they will not get damaged. But if you're going to serve it at home, you may want to remove the paper from the chocolate. And those pretty little chocolate cups on a nice little doily or a very pretty platter, they are just beautiful. And don't forget to dust them with your chocolate dust. Oh, it is so good and so pretty. Everybody's just going to absolutely love it. Everybody's going to love it. Well, I wanted to share with you. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Sue Morton said that there was a special event that happened with her one Christmas. She said she had been so busy shopping and been out in the stores and just going a mile a minute because she had a lot to do. And she said the parking lot, when she went to go out to her car, was absolutely jammed. Well, we've all experienced that. We know what that's like in the holiday season. So she was trying to get out of the parking lot. And as she was waiting her turn to get out of the parking lot, she saw a gentleman with a sign over his face that read, "Merry Christmas, please spare some food." And she said all she could see were his eyes, that's all. And she said there was a little voice inside of her that said, "Stop, turn around, and go back." Now, most of us probably would have just gone on by, but she didn't. She parked her car, and she walked around the block to where this man was. And she said in her back seat, she had several plates of cookies that she had made up for friends. So she took one of those plates that was supposed to go to a friend and walked over to this man and said, "Merry Christmas." And he thanked her, and he said, "Bless you." Now, she said when she turned away, she really felt good inside. She felt that this was really something that was very special. She got in her car and then decided to drive back and see what was happening with this man. When she drove by him, she said he was eating one of her cookies. He recognized her, waved, and he had tears in his eyes. She said she was so deeply moved. She said, "I felt so very, very blessed because my action of sharing my cookies that I had made, well, they had really touched someone's life in a very special way." Who the man was, Mary or Sue never, ever found out. But she made a difference. And I think that that is so important for us to remember. Wherever we are at any given time, in any given place, our actions and what we give out to people may make a significant difference. You might be standing in line waiting for something and you're chatting with somebody and maybe they tell you about something that's going on in their lives or they just don't know what to look for. One of my movies that I've always really enjoyed is Miracle on 34th Street. And in there, Santa Claus talks to a shopper and says, "You know, we don't have this, but why don't you go check out the other store?" And I can't remember whether it was Macy's or not. And the woman says, "I'm just amazed. Who would ever say we don't have it in our store, but go and check out this other store?" She said, "I never hear of that." And every time I see that scene, it reminds me of how, as individuals, we can share information, we can give the best of what we have to those that may need it in a moment. And we never know how their lives are going to be affected and perhaps even changed in a positive way. That's what we are. We're links. We're all partners in this experience of life. And I think part of that partnership is sharing what we know. This is Donna Siebel, and I know that we're out of time. Have an absolutely awesome weekend. It is the last big shopping weekend before the holiday gets here. So take care. Be patient. Have fun. Laugh. Have hot cocoa and cookies and chocolates and enjoy your time with your friends and your family. Remember, it's the spirit of the holiday season that makes it so very special, plus all of the other things that we can enjoy and share. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a wonderful time to enjoy life, count your blessings, and know that it only gets better from here. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.